Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, Descanso 89.1 FM. Today we open with a preview of the South Carolina and California presidential primary races. Then on Crime Beat, hear the latest court ruling blocking release of the bolder-than-most rapist in Hukumba Hot Springs. Plus hear why District Attorney Summer Steffens is recommending reducing or dropping sentencing on 26,000 marijuana convictions. Activist San Diego is planning a protest at a Lemon Grove Toyota dealership Saturday over the carmaker joining a Trump administration lawsuit to roll back our state's clean air emission laws. State Senator Brian Jones has a new bill to exempt translators and interpreters from requirements of AB 5, a new law that aims to help some workers but is harming many independent contractors. And California's Attorney General has announced a new DNA technology to help solve more missing person cases. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 election process.
I know Joe. We know Joe. But most importantly, Joe knows us.
House Majority Whip Jim Clyburn from South Carolina, the highest-ranking African-American in Congress, officially endorsed former Vice President Joe Biden yesterday, just 3 days before the South Carolina primary. Duke University political scientist Deandra Rose says in South Carolina, the first primary state with a majority Black Democratic electorate, the African-American vote is crucial.
There has been this focus on South Carolina, and I think that does have some broader value because the Democratic Party tends to be one in which the party faithful, the committed voters, are more diverse.
Biden still leads in South Carolina polls, but on his tail are Senator Bernie Sanders, the national frontrunner, and billionaire businessman Tom Steyer. Nationally, former Mayor Mike Bloomberg is in second place among Black voters. In North Carolina, where Rose lives, nearly half of Democrats are African American.
There's a lot of excitement to see what will happen on Super Tuesday. If we'll see a candidate like Michael Bloomberg, who sat out the early states, emerge as a powerful force in a state like North Carolina.
South Carolina might determine Biden's sustainability, says University of Nevada, Las Vegas, Professor Rebecca Gill.
So if Biden is able to do well, he may be able to win that support back that had been sort of siphoned away by Bloomberg.
Bloomberg, who founded a gun control lobbying group, responded to yesterday's mass shooting that killed six people at a brewery in Milwaukee. He called for background checks. Back to Super Tuesday, Deandra Rose says North Carolina, the third largest Super Tuesday delegate hall, tends to be an indicator of national trends.
So we're an increasingly diverse state. Many residents of North Carolina have come from elsewhere, and so we have a lot of transplant. We also see this interesting trend whereby there are lots of unaffiliated voters, and so there tend to be a number of people who are up for grabs who might split a ticket in the general election. So I don't think that it's surprising that we see a lot of traffic among candidates who come through North Carolina.
And that makes campaigning there different than in the smaller early states. California-based reporter Phil Trounstein says it's the same in his Super Tuesday state.
You can't do in-person campaigning in California. You can't go door-to-door in California. It's too big. It's the size of a major industrial country.
In other news, Barack Obama called on South Carolina TV stations to remove an ad by a pro-Trump PAC that uses Obama's words out of context to criticize Biden. And President Trump sued the New York Times yesterday for libel in response to an opinion piece claiming the Trump campaign had a deal with Russian President Vladimir Putin, election interference in 2016, in exchange for, quote, a new pro-Russian foreign policy, unquote. From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Bolke. Thanks for listening at pacificanetwork.org and publicnewsservice.org.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat report. The appellate court on Monday voted to block release of Alvin Quarles, dubbed the bolder-than-most rapist, into Hukumba Hot Springs. The appellate court overturned a decision made by Superior Court Judge David Gill to grant a conditional release to Quarles. Judge Gill drew criticism for holding closed-door hearings that shut out victims and the public. A bill supported by District Attorney Summer Steffens, called the Sexually Violent Predator Act, has been introduced into the state Senate to require that hearings on release of sexual predators be held in open court unless a judge can provide a compelling reason for secrecy. Quarles was convicted of over a dozen sexual assaults, including rapes, that he forced victims' partners to watch. He was sentenced to 50 years in prison, but was later transferred to a state mental hospital and declared a sexually violent predator before Judge Gill approved his conditional release, which has now been blocked by the appellate court decision. Quarles will remain at the Coalinga State Hospital, though he could appeal to the state Supreme Court.
San Diego's district attorney has filed a motion asking a judge to dismiss 1,000 misdemeanor marijuana convictions and reduce 25,000 felony marijuana convictions to misdemeanors. The office indicates it has reviewed convictions as far back as 1968. The motions are awaiting a judicial decision. Proposition 64, which California voters approved in 2016, legalized recreational use of marijuana and gave prosecutors the ability to seek sentencing reductions for felony convictions of growing, transporting, or possessing cannabis for sale. It also allowed dismissal of misdemeanor convictions on cannabis charges. To date, the San Diego DA has reduced or dismissed over 1,600 marijuana convictions. DA Summer Steffens says that her office has been proactive in giving those convicted for marijuana offenses, quote, the ability to move forward with their lives without a conviction that may have been negatively impacting their lives by restricting their employment or housing. Similar dismissals and sentencing reductions have occurred through the California Clear My Record pilot program in other California counties, including Los Angeles, San Francisco, Sacramento, and others. If you have a marijuana-related conviction and you want to learn if you qualify for a dismissal of charges or a reduction in sentencing, you can contact the San Diego County Public Defender's Office at 619-338-4700. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Brianna Gomez.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
Toyota positions itself in marketing as a green company, but the automaker recently joined the Trump administration in a lawsuit against California, seeking to overturn our state's clean emission laws for vehicles. On Saturday morning, February 29th, protesters are organizing a march through Lemon Grove, ending in a rally at Larry Miller Toyota in Lemon Grove. A press release issued by Toyota Loves Trump, an environmental justice campaign organized by activist San Diego, states, Toyota management wants to put their profit above our health. We must let them know this is unacceptable. The group invites everyone who cares about clean air, public health, and freedom from fossil fuels to join in a march through Lemon Grove starting at 9:30 a.m. Saturday. The marchers will meet outside a vacant social services building at 7065 Broadway in Lemon Grove and march to the Toyota dealership nearby, where they will hold a protest rally and hear from several speakers. A news release from the group says the rally is important because Toyota and Trump won't stand for a better environment, adding, "We will." You can RSVP to participate in the rally by visiting Toyota Trump Forever, and that's spelled Toyota Trump, the number 4ever.com. Reporting for East County Magazine from Lemon Grove, this is Jonathan Getz.
State Senator Brian Jones, a Santee Republican, has announced that he is joint authoring Senate Bill 875, a bill to exempt interpreters and translators from AB 5, the new law that took effect in January. Authored by San Diego Democratic Assemblymember Lorena Gonzalez Fletcher, AB 5 was intended to crack down on abuses by big companies like Uber and Lyft, but it is also forcing thousands of independent contractors to become employees or form their own companies, or lose work. Jones says the law has been a boon to union leaders, but horrible for California's economy, workers, and businesses, and that AB 5 is particularly harmful to businesses owned by women and persons of color. Interpreters and translators work in a woman-dominated profession, according to a recent Forbes article, which describes the difficulties AB5 is posing for these hard-working entrepreneurs. San Diego County has a large population of immigrants and refugees from around the world. Senator Jones notes that interpreters and translators help some of the most vulnerable people in California. And he adds, these service providers are often out on the road working a variable schedule. They are clearly much more of a contractor rather than employee, yet the arbitrary nature of AB 5 has boxed them in. He urges Democrats to join him in fixing one of the unforeseen negative consequences of the new law. AB 5 has sparked lawsuits by freelance journalists, photographers, and truckers. Other measures have been introduced seeking to exempt musicians and some additional occupations that have been particularly hard hit by AB 5. The bill has also harmed nonprofit organizations, media groups, and small businesses that rely on independent contractors. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
California Attorney General Javier Becerra has announced a DNA technology advancement that will enable the California Department of Justice to solve more missing person cases. The department is the first accredited state crime lab in North America to begin fully sequencing mitochondrial DNA, which makes it easier to test degraded evidence samples that have been subjected to harsh environmental conditions. This advancement is particularly important to process DNA involving unknown human remains and help families find closure regarding loved ones who have gone missing. Attorney General Becerra says, quote, anything we can do to help families find closure is critical. He adds, this breakthrough will help make a direct difference in people's lives. When biological evidence has been exposed to harsh environmental conditions, DNA may be broken down into small pieces. This makes it harder to successfully obtain DNA information that can be used to identify an unknown person. When human remains have been outdoors for extended periods of time, scientists at crime labs often turn to mitochondrial DNA, since it is generally present in far greater quantities than standard nuclear DNA. While nuclear DNA is typically more informative, sometimes mitochondrial DNA is all that is available. Mitochondrial DNA is found in mitochondria, which are organelles inside human cells. Mitochondria are involved in a biochemical process used for breathing and energy production in the body. Organelles exist outside of the cell's nucleus, where human DNA is packaged, and are found in every human cell. Mitochondrial DNA only contains DNA information that is passed along maternally. Taking advantage of massive parallel sequencing technology, the State Justice Department's Bureau of Forensic Services has now validated a process for sequencing all mitochondrial DNA. Previously, only part of the control region of mitochondrial DNA, approximately 5% of the genome, was analyzed in cases involving unknown persons. This new advancement in technology will be used to compare mitochondrial DNA provided by families to biological evidence found in cases involving human remains, a process that the Justice Department hopes will lead to solving many more missing persons cases, including cold cases using evidence found years ago. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Brianna Gomez.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ Descanso, 89.1 FM, recording at our studio in East County. Today, my very special guest is Brian Sesko. He's chair of the Lakeside Community Planning Group, and he's also a member of the Lakeside Design Review Board. He's also the owner of Sesko Land Company, a home builder and realtor. He owns a cattle and horse ranch, and he says he's a real-life cowboy. And he's one of four candidates running for San Diego County Supervisor in the 2nd District, being vacated by Diane Jacob due to term limits. Brian, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
So tell us, why did you decide to run for County Supervisor?
Well, I've been a very private person for a long time. I've been self-employed almost all of my life. About 5-6 years ago, some good friends got me involved with the Lakeside Planning Group. I've been on it for that length of time now. The last few years, the board members have elected me as their chairperson, which has put me right up front with all that's going on down at the county. And yeah, in 5 years, I have learned that there's big room for improvement down there.
Okay. So what are a couple of your main goals if you win?
Well, the first thing I'll do is make sure that there's more direct communication with the Board of Supervisors and the general public. It's real clear that too many things are getting solved and changed and voted on at 9 o'clock in the morning downtown by the Board of Supervisors when the general public is hard at work and not able to attend or not willing to fight the traffic to get downtown. Yeah. That's got to change.
Yeah, we hear that complaint a lot from the public. Good point.
Yeah, so one of the things I would insist on doing is trying to get the Board of Supervisors to come out at least once a month to each different community where there is a planning group, such as the one I sit on, so that all supervisors have to face the constituents in any given area and not be hiding downtown at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Very interesting idea. The housing shortage, especially a lack of affordable homes and accessible homes, is one of the biggest issues we hear about from voters in our region. How would you balance demand for more homes, including affordable ones, versus the pushback we see in some communities against dense development, high rises in urban areas and rural areas, concerns over sprawl development, traffic, and making sure they have safe evacuation routes during a wildfire?
Well, the first thing that needs to be done in the way of affordable housing is get the county departments to work effectively and efficiently. It's out of control down there in that 20 years ago, I could get a permit for a house in 90 days, maybe 120 days, and pay $4,000 or $5,000. Now, 20 years later, it costs $30,000 or more to get a permit and takes a year, sometimes longer.
Is that for just a single house or for housing development or both?
That's a single home.
Wow.
And a housing development can go 2 and 5 years and maybe even longer, depending on the criteria that the county is putting on developers.
So you're looking to streamline the permitting process and reduce some of those fees?
Without a doubt. It needs to be streamlined and the fees need to come down. When you're looking at a single family home, I just pulled a permit for a single family home I'm building, and the fees were over $30,000. That's ridiculous when years ago the fees used to be a few thousand dollars.
Yeah, that's a big increase. Where do you stand on Measure A, which for voters who may not be familiar yet, it would allow the people instead of the supervisors to have the final vote on large housing developments if they require a waiver of the general plan, typically something that would be denser than the general plan would allow in a particular area?
I'm not going to support having the voters all over San Diego County make decisions for individual communities. The communities of Lakeside that I represent, communities similar to ours, which like Alpine or Fallbrook, those communities are different than the cities and the communities up and down the coast. So the people who live on a coastline have a whole different lifestyle than what people have in East County. I think the people in individual communities are the best people to decide what comes into their community.
What about Measure B, which in a way is like Measure A? It would be giving people a vote, but on a specific project that was approved by one vote of the supervisors, but was actually rejected by the community planning group for the Newland Sierra project, and you know, had a lot of community opposition.
Well, again, it goes back to the fact that I truly believe that people in their individual communities should make the decisions, not the Board of Supervisors, who are, most of them don't live in that area. They probably don't know where that development really is, and they most likely voted on that at 9 o'clock in the morning when very few people came out to oppose it.
You have called for considering the elimination of the County Planning Commission and putting power back into the hands of local community planning groups to ultimately decide on projects in each neighborhood. Do you want to elaborate on that anymore?
Yes. Again, it gets back to the very fact that, like the board that I sit on, there's 15 members, all members of the community. They have a very strong belief in how they want their community to be. The Planning Commission is appointed by supervisors, which makes it one of the very largest special interest groups in the county. It's wrong. They vote on things, After planning groups reject ideas or projects, the planning commission makes their own decision and then forwards that idea and vote to the Board of Supervisors. That should change. I believe the planning commission should be banned, and that authority should be vested in each individual planning board.
Would you have an appeal right to supervisors, or do you think what the community planning groups want would be the absolute decision with no appeal to supervisors if you eliminated the planning commission?
I believe that if the Board of Supervisors is required to come out for important issues and controversial issues in each community, and they had to listen directly to the citizens, the vote would probably stand with what the people in their community wants, not individual supervisors who are not going to be affected by their decision.
Yeah, very, very interesting idea. This is kind of a related note, but we over the years at East County Magazine have heard complaints off record from wildlife biologists and Native American monitors on some of these massive projects like wind farms and things. And they tell us that they've been pressured by developers to cover up findings of things like endangered species or sacred artifacts because the developers pay for the environmental impact reports and the developers are allowed by this county to choose which experts to hire. Do you think Planning and Development Services should be revised to prohibit developers from picking who writes the environmental reviews on their own projects? And instead, maybe you could let the developer fee cover the costs, but have the county choose who to hire to do the EIRs to avoid the potential of corruption or lessen the potential of corruption?
Well, it's been my experience in 40 years of building that whenever those reports are required, the developers get a list from the county of approved companies that we would like to think the county is vested to make sure that they are going to do a complete and thorough job. Based my last 5 years of 6 years now of dealing with county level at the planning group level, I don't have a lot of confidence in any of the departments to handle that important of a decision.
Interesting, interesting. Because, of course, what we hear is, you know, the biologist will say, well, the developer says, if you ever want to work for us again, if you ever want us to hire you for another one of our projects, you know, this needs to go away or be swept under the rug. So, but you're saying there's potential for problems both ways. Maybe it goes to who the county is choosing to run the development services department. Interesting. How would you address the homelessness crisis in our region, Brian? Another big issue.
Well, first of all, dealing with it in Lakeside, because we have a high number of homeless people in Lakeside, it comes to our board often.
Yeah.
The bottom line is, I went to a meeting at Diane Jacob's office the other day, which she held specifically for homeless issue. 5 people showed up.
Wow.
It was at 1:00 in the afternoon. I had to break my day open to get down there. Nothing got done at that meeting other than to clarify to me that the county is not prepared to take this problem on head first. They have a department down there now that is staffing up, and I don't know why they need more staff to deal with it.
The homelessness crisis that we're seeing now comes against the backdrop of a December U.S. Supreme Court ruling, which upheld, in the case of the city of Boise, but because it was upholding a Ninth Circuit decision, it applies all over the western states, including California, that it is now illegal for police or sheriff to arrest homeless people for sleeping in public places if the jurisdiction doesn't have a shelter with beds available. So now the county is, they can't just tell the police to go sweep away people in every public place. They are moving forward on approving some funding, they just did, to study locations for possibly opening the first county shelter with services in the unincorporated area. And in the meantime, I understand they're giving some hotel vouchers and things short-term to people. Do you agree with that approach? And if not, would you have any other ideas to bring to the table.
Okay, I guess to clarify my position about the homeless people. Biggest problem is now is that not only do we have homeless people with medical needs and issues, the neighborhoods are being inundated with actual criminals that have been left out of the jails because of an overcrowding problem. So our sheriff has a real problem on his hands. He has to deal not only with homeless issues, but actual criminals that are now homeless because they're not in state lockup.
Yeah.
One of the things that could happen, and I've talked to the sheriffs, there's a misconnection between them and what they can do and can't do. In that meeting, the county rep told us that they have plenty of beds for the sheriff to take people up there violating and doing illegal activities on our streets.
Right. If somebody is, say, shooting up drugs publicly or something like that, or stealing, they can be arrested for those crimes. They can't be arrested simply for sleeping in a public place.
No, but there are communities that are passing ordinances against that, providing they have housing, beds, and the necessary facilities to take care of them. The problem with our current Board of Supervisors, too many of them have been there for far too long. They haven't had a new thought in at least 10 years. This problem didn't happen yesterday.
True.
This problem has been going on, and all of a sudden now they're starting to think about things. One simple fix. We have military housing that our men and women in uniform can construct in 2 or 3 days that can take on a whole city of people. They do it overseas. They do it everywhere. It's good enough housing for our military people. There's no reason to wait any longer to provide housing and beds when overnight we could have a small city put up in the community. Every community has a place for these emergency-type facilities that can house them, give them shelter, give them place for storage. Medical facilities can be in these facilities. We just got to quit talking about it and doing more studies about it. Let's take some action and get it done so our sheriff can do what they want to do with these people that are taking over our streets and our parks.
Okay. Supervisor Jacob has a legacy of creating many parks, preserving open spaces, nature preserves, and expanding trails for hikers, cyclists, and equestrians across the unincorporated region. How important is open space preservation to you, and is that a legacy you would look to continue, or do you have perhaps other priorities for the discretionary funds?
Right now, based on my record keeping, there's plenty of parks in San Diego County right now. Several of them are not used. I live in an area where there's 500 acres behind my ranch that are owned by Fish and Game, unused. Behind that is Boulder Oaks that the county bought years ago, another couple hundred acres, unused, no access to it. So the decision-making process at the county for what they buy and where they buy it and whether or not it has access to people is flawed, as is many of the decisions that the county makes. If they have extra money, then let's put it into this housing problem, because that's what the people in the community want to deal with. Very few of them in East County go to these parks. Very few of them drive 10 miles to go to a park when they can walk across their own property. So let's deal with the problem with the cash we have, which affects people that do want to use the parks, instead of buying another park off somewhere where they're not going to use it.
How do you believe demand for sand needed for road and construction projects locally should be balanced against concerns by residents and environmentalists about sand mines that are proposed in Lakeside's scenic El Monte Valley, in your own area there, and on the Cottonwood Golf Course, which is next to a federal wildlife preserve along the Sweetwater River in Rancho San Diego? And I might add, both those projects are fairly close to homes and sensitive uses such as schools or equestrian-based businesses.
Well, as a contractor, I know the importance of sand. Right now, one of the big issues is it's going to create a lot of traffic. What people have to understand is the traffic of the trucks for sand is already on our roads. The sand that we need in San Diego County is imported. A lot of it comes from out of state or it comes up from Mexico. All has to be transported on our roads. The issue of the sand mining issue out there in East County, I had a public forum where over 300 people attended it as the chairperson of the Lakeside Planning Group. It was real clear that the community does not want a sand mining operation down the valley of El Monte Scenic Route. Well, if I'm elected supervisor, I would stick with what the people in the neighborhood want over the demand for sand. We currently import the sand needs of San Diego County. It's expensive, but it may be less expensive than destroying El Monte Valley, where the people out there have lived for the last 100 years or more and do not want that type of development in their community.
Very good point. And there's certainly valley fever concerns in that particular location as well. You stir up that sand and there could be health consequences.
I don't know about valley fever. I have heard about it, but you know, the farmers have been farming that area for over 100 years, and when they till up the ground to plant their crops, they probably are at risk of developing the fever as well, but not as much as what I understand
the sand mining operation. In your eyes, it's basically just an issue of community choice, and if the community doesn't want it, then it shouldn't happen.
That's what I believe, and that's, once again, it gets back to making sure that the supervisors up and down the coastline who are not going to have to deal with the traffic and the impact come out to the community and have their hearing about that issue in front of the people that are going to be most affected.
Okay. Wildfires are a constant concern across our region, where we've had some of the worst fires in California history. Brian, do you have any particular ideas for how we should be improving fire protection or improving our firefighting resources?
Well, one of the things would be obviously funding. Earlier in this interview, you talked about the additional money that the county may have for buying open space land. I think that money would be best served by funneling it into whatever additional firefighting equipment, the resources that we need to fight the fires. There are a lot of areas of these open space parks in our community that are unmanned and unkept, and fire roars through them like it did in the 03 fire right across my ranch. So I'm very familiar.
You had a cedar fire.
The cedar fire came across about 500 acres of open space that was mostly owned by the county, some by federal departments. They don't maintain it. The brush gets 5 or 6 foot tall, and when the fire comes, it is horrendous. I lived through one.
So maybe more clearing of brush is something that's in order too, huh?
Without a doubt. As individual homeowners, the county requires us to maintain 50 to 100 feet around our properties.
Yeah, defensible
space. Well, the county
space
doesn't do that on their own properties when they back up against homeowners.
Good point. In Julian, Cuyamaca area, some of the residents there have been voicing concerns of what they say have been some slower response times after the county shut down their volunteer fire department and put the county fire department, run by CAL FIRE, in charge. CAL FIRE disputes that, but when we've asked for certain records, they haven't been forthcoming. If you are elected, Brian, would you commit to insist on seeing response time records and station staffing levels in the former Julian Cuyamaca Fire Protection District and compare those to the response times and station staffing for a year or two before the takeover? And if there were gaps or shortfalls, would you take action to better protect the residents of Julian and, of course, the many of us who love to go visit there and enjoy that apple pie?
Well, it's not only Julian that I would want to protect, because the fire that came down in 03 not only came out of Ramona, came down through Poway and all through Rancho Bernardo. So it's just not the backcountry people that are affected by these fires. When
True.
They roar through, they go right into the cities. So one of the things that I will do as supervisor is to take a look at every department at the county and get an efficiency report and an effectiveness report off of every department to document that we're getting a good dollar's worth of work out of every department. And right now, I know we're not.
Okay. What are your priorities on transportation, another controversial issue? How would you balance state mandates to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and the desire of many to increase transit, especially in the urban areas, against the needs of people in East County who want to see improvements to highways such as 52, 67, and 94 to reduce traffic gridlock or assure swift evacuation routes if there's a fire?
Well, the first thing I would do is take a look at Sandag, who has taken over the improvement of our roads, or the lack of improvement of our roads, because they're led by a bunch of elite people that are way overpaid, including the chief executive officer, that for some reason Sandag has decided to pay that individual over $400,000 to be a consultant. And his vision is that we all take a bus to work, that we all live in a condo somewhere, and that we get rid of our cars. There's way too much power at Sandag. The whole department is overpaid and underserviced by people in East County. We do not want to live like they live in Encinitas and La Jolla with gridlock everywhere you go, to where you have a project gets approved. Housing is not appropriately developed with enough parking in a lot of places. People have to walk sometimes a block or two to get to the home they bought or the house they're renting. That's just wrong, and East County does not want it. Sandag needs to be stopped with their vision for East County.
Some residents in areas such as Boulevard, Campo, and Hacumba have complained of problems from the big wind turbines out there, and yet more of these are planned. They're over 500 feet tall. That's like a 50-story building. Some of them say they've suffered headaches, sleep disruptions, and other health issues because of noise, infrasound, flashing lights, and blade flicker. They've also had some turbines that have actually burst into flames, causing brush fires, fortunately in winter, thrown off blades, or even collapsed, which puts safety at risk, as well as killing birds. Residents have reported property values have dropped sharply, making it hard to sell homes near the wind turbines. What are your views, again, on how to balance? There clearly is a demand for clean, green energy and state mandates requiring counties to do something to address the greenhouse gases, versus avoiding harm to neighbors in these rural areas and to wildlife out there. I'd also like you to address whether, if such a project is to be built, should they be treated like freeways, where you compensate property owners for lost property values or give them the option to just sell the house and move?
Well, first of all, I understand it's an issue that can't be stopped in some aspects, because a lot of the turbines are going on reservation land, and the reservation rights of the local Indian tribes really takes that out of our hands. So if unfortunately you live near a reservation, the tribes may want to put up those turbines, which helps meet the criteria that the county wants. So those are not going to be able to be stopped. I believe the ones that are going out on any public land or county land, state land, that should go before the local communities, which should have the input that they need to have.
Yeah, there's also some on private land, too, that the county has jurisdiction over.
Well, and if it's on private land, again, that should go before the local planning group. It should get supported by the local community, not the Board of Supervisors. I have no confidence in the Board of Supervisors making good decisions for backcountry people.
Okay. How would you address the need for green energy? I mean, it is a state mandate, as well as many people are concerned genuinely about the climate change issue. If you're not going to have things like big wind turbines in a place where people don't want them, or more mass transit instead of, say, freeway things, do you have any ideas on ideas that could help with that problem?
Well, the first thing I would like to see happen is mandates coming out of Sacramento legislature not do a one fix for all communities. The most recent one they've passed down on us in the industry is to put solar units on every new house built in San Diego County, as well as across the state. They talk about affordable housing. Well, how are you going to add $20,000 or $30,000 of a solar unit on top of a house and then start asking for affordable housing? Their mandates coming out of Sacramento are unrealistic, as proven by the fact that just recently developers in Sacramento have got a waiver on that because they're able now to tie into the solar farms so that they don't have to put those solar units on every individual house.
So is that a better option, you think, to have solar farms or maybe solar on parking lots and rooftops of commercial buildings, something like that, that would be not as destructive in the rural areas and not add to housing costs so much?
Yes, that is most likely a better answer. I know for a fact I get my hay out of the Imperial Valley. They have enormous solar fields out there now, generating more power than most of San Diego is using. If it gets directed properly and gets put back into the grid properly, we can see a reduction in our local utility cost, and we will not be impacting individual homeowners as is currently the program.
Okay. Supervisor Jacob has helped many communities in unincorporated areas build libraries. Will you continue that for the unincorporated areas that don't yet have one, like Casa de Oro down the street here, a meeting last night where people were wanting their antiquated library updated? And also, I've specifically had requests from residents in Santee and La Mesa, where their cities have so far not stepped up to the plate to replace aging libraries. And they're asking, as the county maybe has fewer requests in the rural areas that already now have them, can they do a little bit more to help people in those two cities get them? Or are the resources available, or would that be a priority?
Well, again, it gets back to local control. I think I've made an effort to go to almost every planning group in the county. And it's real clear to me that the people in the community either elect the planning group or appoint them. They're the best people to decide what they want in their community. There's only so much money to go around, and if the community decides they want money spent on a library, it ought to be their choice. The community, every individual community, should have the ability to decide how their community is shaped.
Okay. One of your opponents, Kenya Taylor, wants to put more focus on health and human services, her area of expertise. I noticed your website didn't mention those issues specifically. Can you tell us, please, what your priorities, if any, would be within health and human services, which is a big part of the county budget? I should add that includes mental health care and a lot of other things.
Well, it gets back to the very simple statement I made earlier. Every department needs to be assessed for how effective they're being. Money is being poured into those departments with very little oversight, as best I can tell at this point. We need to have a full assessment of every department, not hire more people, but make the people working in those departments be more efficient. Find a way for them to be more efficient. Encourage them to be more efficient, and you'll probably find, if we can get the unions out of the way, because it's tough to get efficiency when the union is stopping every aspect of criticizing somebody's employment record or criticizing their work output. That needs to change. And I would like to go right on record right now is that the unions are part of they're a special interest group in the county that needs to be put in check. That's part of the problem. That's part of the problem across the board in all departments.
One specific healthcare concern that I hear a lot from rural readers, we've actually done an award-winning series last year or the year before on this issue, is ambulance response times, which are very slow in some areas, and even by the county standards, acceptable in some of these rural areas is a half hour or more, and sometimes it can take an hour, even on a highway if you have an accident. The entire state of Missouri has a response time of something like 7 or 8 minutes, and they certainly have rural areas. So my question is, what would you do, if anything, to improve ambulance response times in these rural areas? Do you think that the county can or should do better than they're doing right now?
Well, I don't have the records available to me about the response time, but if the community feels that the response times are inadequate, then we need to take steps to make sure they're not. And if that means we need to open up the volunteer fire departments in these areas and staff them with ambulances and people that are qualified to meet the needs of their community, then might be a best way to spend some money to open up the volunteer departments that for a lifetime in the backcountry was the lifeblood of the community.
Very interesting response. Thank you for that. How would you reduce the high number of deaths in county jails, if you've had a chance to study that, since that issue was raised at a candidate forum not too long ago? And do you have any other priorities regarding crime, criminal justice, public safety?
Well, I did take a look at it. I made some phone calls to the sheriff's department about the issue of the deaths in the county jail. All I can say to that is the sheriff has his hands full. These people are not your typical PTA members that he's dealing with. These are criminals. Some of these are really bad people with unbelievable drug problems, gang problems. So before we get too involved with blaming the sheriff for these deaths, I think we need to look at the type of people that they're having to deal with and assess and look at what probably their past history is. Let's find out. Do they have pre-existing health conditions? Are they on drugs? Are they coming out of some kind of enormous withdrawal program since they got locked up? There's lots of things that have to be looked at, but the sheriff's hands are really tied by the type of people that he's having to deal with. I don't want to see people dying in the jails, but it's going to happen, and let's get behind the sheriff's back and make sure that whatever reports are coming out are accurate, and if something can be done about it, that would be up front and foremost that we should do.
What are your views on vacation rentals such as Airbnbs? And do you think any regulation is needed to address concerns over some about things like party houses?
Well, I'm in the real estate business. I have sold some rental properties that down in Pacific Beach area. Mm-hmm. I understand it can be a problem. There are laws on the books now about partying. They can be enforced. They should be enforced. I don't believe that the neighborhood should be completely destroyed by one or two people who allow their Airbnb to destroy the character of a neighborhood. I believe it's happening. There are laws on the books. They need to be enforced.
Okay. By the other side of the coin, do you think that property rights should be respected if you have a responsible owner who's doing Airbnbs to make a little extra money? But they're not, you know, they're not creating problems for neighbors with wild parties and things.
And again, I think that's very simply said, but if they're following the rules, they are responsible landlords, making sure that they're not infringing on the neighbors' rights for a peaceful life, then they should be allowed to do within the laws that are on the books. If the whole neighborhood wants to change it, they have a vehicle by which they should be able to do that.
Supervisor Jacob has done a lot to increase agritourism and help small farmers, given that San Diego County, a lot of people don't know, has more small family farms than any other county in America. She's promoted things like making it easier to have a wine tasting room or do beekeeping. Do you have any ideas for helping to support our agricultural industry, and is that a priority of yours?
Well, without a doubt it is. I have an active horse and cattle ranch. We're under all kinds of restrictions about what we can do and what we can't do. And as the chairman of the planning group for Lakeside, as well as going to other planning groups, the federal, state, and county regulations are cumbersome and way out of line to support the statement you just made about Diane's effort to make it happen. I have too many people trying to open up small vineyards or different things, and the county regulations, state and federal regulations, are stopping them.
Interesting. So it hasn't gone far enough in your view at this point?
No, without a doubt. It's not gotten far enough. Too many regulations, and as a small business owner, that's one of the things that I would put up front, is to push back against all levels of regulations that stop local businesses from opening.
Okay. Are there any programs or budget expenditures that you specifically would cut, or the flip side of that, any new revenue source ideas that you have to make sure there's enough to fund items that you consider priorities, or that the people in the communities consider priorities?
Well, the first thing I would do is put a hiring freeze down there at the county. They're spending way too much money for how effective the different departments are. There's a lot of people, good, hardworking people down there, but right now they have an enormous hiring program going on for more. The county seems to think they're flush with cash because the economy is going well. But I can assure you the day is going to come when the county sources of financing are going to get hit by a slowdown in the economy. And one of the biggest things that we have to start looking at is the unions have left us taxpayers with over $3 billion of unfunded liability that is going to be enormous that nobody wants to talk about because the unions are so strong down there at the county. The only way that that unfunded liability is going to get met is they're going to have to come to us taxpayers and raise taxes, because the county does not generate the funds to keep that pension going. It's going to get ugly, and it's going to come to a neighborhood near you soon, because they're going to come looking for tax dollars to pay for their pensions. And unfortunately, us taxpayers, small business people, we don't have the pensions that the public employee unions have gotten for their members. We don't have those same pensions, but they're going to be asking for us to pay for them. It's wrong. It needs to get in check. And it's unfortunate that most of the community has no idea about it.
This race has seen some ugly and at times outright deceptive mailers and ads. Former Senator Joel Anderson sent a mailer claiming Poway Mayor Steve Voss, one of the other candidates, was backed by Never Trumpers, and it showed pictures of Nancy Pelosi, Bernie Sanders, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, three prominent liberals. However, Voss is a conservative Republican who actually presented President Trump with a medal during the president's visit here. That was in response to the Shabbat of Poway shooting. A PAC that backs Voss has run online ads stating that Anderson illegally funneled $100,000 into his campaign that was over legal limits. And that's actually true, although it was in a legislative campaign years ago, not the current one. Anderson was fined by the Fair Political Practices Commission and returned that money to the donors. Both Anderson and Voss have stated in public forums recently that they do take money from developers or whoever will give it to them, but they say they're not influenced by that in their decision making. They might vote for or against a particular project. Kenya Taylor, the third candidate, says she's refused developer money and can't be bought, although she has taken money from other interests that aren't developers. Brian, can you tell us who the major funders are of your campaign?
Well, I'm not taking money from anyone. I'm funding this campaign solely with my own funds because I'm not a politician, but I know how politics works. If you're taking money from somebody, you can say all day long that you're not going to favor that individual or that group. Well, just look at the mess not only the state is with all the special interest groups. They're not giving money to these folks without coming to you at some point, if not directly, indirectly, for one of their pet projects. That's why I'm not taking any money now, and it's unlikely that I will. My campaign is word of mouth, one person at a time. That's why I'm known as Brian One Term Sesko, because I want one term to bring fresh ideas, and that's the way it should be. I've asked the other candidates individually if they would go with a one-term program, and I haven't got a response back. But
can you tell us if you have endorsers that you're proud of that you'd like to talk about?
Well, on my website, it talks about the regular folk. I know a lot of people in the area that are voting for me, telling their friends about me. And yes, I do have, you know, some people out in Imperial Valley. You know, Tom Brundy's a big guy out there in the valley. I buy hay from Tom. He's offered to give me money. I've refused money from several people. I do have some checks in the drawer from people who sent them to me unsolicited. They're still in the drawer uncashed.
Very interesting. Very impressive.
I'm sorry.
Don't hear that very much from politicians these days.
No, and it gets back to that I want this campaign to be word of mouth. It may not be effective. I don't know how many people I've reached. I appreciate this interview. It'll go a long way at the end of this campaign to get the regular people to look at a regular guy who's running his own campaign with one person at a time, because I don't want to be a professional politician. You talk about these hit pieces that going out. Fortunately, I'm not in that level of politics to where they can find anything that I've done wrong.
Yeah, you haven't sent them and you haven't been targeted.
So. I haven't sent them and I unlikely would never send them. My granddaddy would turn over in his grave if I ever did the trash that I see going out in the mail.
Well, good for you. Where can people get more information about your candidacy?
Well, real simple. My phone number is 619-300-2825. I'll take direct phone calls. I have a website. It's sesko4supervisor.com.
That's S-E-S-K-O.
Mm-hmm. 4supervisor.com. My business has a website, sescolandcompany.com. You can find out a lot about me. Most people in East County know me. I do an event every year for the children at the Cancer Ward at Rady Hospital.
Oh, very nice.
250 to 300 people come every year. I've been doing it for 15 years. We are big supporters of the poor kids down there at the Cancer Ward down there at Rady Hospital.
Wonderful. That's very heartwarming to hear. Listeners, if you just tuned in, we have been speaking today with Brian Sesko, who is one of four candidates running for the County Board of Supervisors in the 2nd Supervisorial District to replace Diane Jacob, who will be retiring due to term limits. The election is March 3rd. The primary and the top two in this race will go on to the November runoff. And you can find information on all four candidates on our website at eastcountymagazine.org. In the politics section, and we'll be posting a podcast of this interview there soon as well. Is there anything else, Brian, that you would like our listeners to know about you or your candidacy and what you want to do for them if you're elected?
Yeah, very simply, I know that the people in East County are uninformed because the Board of Supervisors does not make an extra effort to keep us all informed. I will change that for everybody in the East County and the back country. I will make sure there's publications of every aspect that affect your lives. I will make every effort to make sure that these meetings at 9 o'clock downtown are stopped so that the people in the community get to see the supervisors that are voting, shaping, and changing their lives without good representation.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Descanso, 89.1 FM.
Thank you.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.